Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, evidence of lakes on a moon of Jupiter, amazingly lifelike robots, and an eclipse of the midnight sun. Here's a scientist's soundbite.
So the robots that my team and I develop have extremely human-like facial expressions on walking biped bodies. We're talking about real androids here.
That was robotics designer David Hansen, chief scientist of Hansen Robotics and Robokind. More with him later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
A new study provides evidence that some northern forests are growing faster due to global warming. Researchers reported in the journal Environmental Research Letters on October 25th that white spruce trees in the far north of Alaska have grown more vigorously in the last 100 years. They've grown especially fast since 1950. The growth is thought to be in response to rapid warming at high latitudes on Earth.
New research led by scientists at Imperial College London suggests that the global trade in frogs, toads, and other amphibians might have accidentally helped create and spread the deadly fungal disease chytrid. The disease has devastated amphibian populations worldwide, leading to a loss of up to 40% of wild amphibians in Central America alone.
In late October, the British risk analysis firm Maplecroft released its Climate Change Vulnerability Index, a scientific report ranking the top 10 countries at extreme risk for impacts from climate change. All of the highly vulnerable countries are developing nations, which suggests that poorer regions of the globe will bear the brunt of extreme weather events triggered by global warming, for example, drought, flooding, or wildfires. The report adds that nations in Northern Europe will be least affected by global warming hazards.
A 3 to 4 million-year-old fragment of whale rib found in a North Carolina strip mine shows a rare interaction between prehistoric sharks and whales. Researchers say the rib has tooth marks on it, evidence that the whale suffered a bite from another giant sea creature, possibly a megatoothed shark. If so, scientists say, this shark might have been some 82 feet long.
Our solar system has 8 official planets. 4 gas giant worlds like Jupiter, and 4 small rocky worlds like Earth. But originally, our solar system might have had a 5th gas giant planet. That's according to a study released in November in the astrophysical journal Letters. The researchers ran thousands of computer simulations of the early solar system and say this 5th gas giant world might have been ejected from the solar system when it was only 600 million years old.
Corals that have been thriving on reefs in the Caribbean for millions of years are being overgrown by sponges. The shift is a consequence of global warming, pollution, and overfishing, according to a new study by North Carolina biologist Joseph Pollack. His paper appeared this November in the scientific journal Bioscience. Pollack says that sponge overgrowth threatens the long-term survival of coral reefs. That's because corals continually rebuild reefs with their hard, calcium-based skeletons. Sponges, on the other hand, are soft tissues and can't build reefs. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. We've got science interviews coming up, but first, this week's Song of the Week. It's by Akote Soul Sounds. They're heading out on tour in December in support of their new album, Taurus.
Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. David Hansen builds amazingly lifelike robots that move and can see faces, make eye contact, and make a full range of facial expressions, understand speech, and even begin to model how you're feeling and who you are, and build a relationship with you. The key to its facial expressions is the skin, called Frubber, a nature-inspired polymer that contracts and folds just like human skin and is extremely lightweight. Dr. Hansen's latest project is building a series of conversational character robots programmed with the complete writings of people such as Philip K. Dick and combined with natural language processing software to enable realistic conversations, according to his popular TED Talk. EarthSky interviewed David Hansen outside near his home in Plano, Texas. You're building robots whose facial expressions mimic those of actual humans. Tell us about them.
So I'm developing robots whose facial expressions mimic the expressions of humans and who have cognition so they can also understand what people are feeling and thinking and have a natural conversation with you and act kind of like people.
We understand that a substance called Frubber, a flesh-like rubber compound, is what gives your robots their lifelike expressions. What is Frubber, and how was it inspired by actual human skin?
Frubber is a material that is a contraction of face and rubber. So it is developed specifically to emulate human flesh and biological soft tissues. And it's inspired by natural cellular structure, specifically in that we're using lipid bilayer techniques. And this is how human cells are formed by this lipid bilayer action. And that's what makes us these sort of chambered, liquid-filled creatures. We're mostly liquid. I mean, so being filled with fluid allows our faces to move very easily. So when I started to develop these human-like robots for face-to-face interactions, I wanted robots to build relationships with people, two things became extremely important. One was emulating the natural facial expressions of people, and the second was emulating the natural cognition of people for these face-to-face interactions. So with the Frubber, we were able to reproduce this cellular structure down to the macromolecular scale, the 4 to 40 nanometer scale, and with a hierarchical pore structure, it goes up from there, the porosity, so it's a very, very low density material and takes very low energy to move into facial expressions, and the expressions fold and crease in ways that are very similar to human biological materials in the faces. So the key to this face-to-face interaction, the aesthetics, the psycho-perceptual effect on the end viewer is tuning the material just right and using it aesthetically in just the right way.
Tell us more about the movements of the robots, both what they do physically and the emotional response they provoke in some people.
Sure. So the movements of these robots are generated by anchors that are cast into our Frubber material and then connected to small motors. And these anchors simulate the facial connective tissue in the human face. And so it pulls the face into all the possible configurations that facial muscles do in people, which is simultaneously an artistic task, cognitive perceptual scientific task, and a mechanical engineering and material science task. It's all of these things simultaneously. Then we have to move the facial expressions into these places and forms that would make sense in a natural conversational interaction. And science has a long way to go before we can achieve what we do in a natural face-to-face encounter. So we have a long way to go, even as far as we've come. We're actually moving the human nervous system when we're making these facial expressions. So you perceive my face and it's communicating something to you naturally. We are evolved to communicate with our faces enormous bandwidths of data flowing back and forth in these natural conversations. We're trying to tap into this natural channel of data transfer. And what happens is that the brain of the observer is changed. It is literally moved emotionally and also cognitively as we're having these face-to-face interactions. If we can make computers that communicate in this naturalistic way with people through these kinds of physically embodied 3D interfaces, the kind of robots that we're making with these natural facial expressions, then we can get our point across very quickly. The machines wind up getting along with us, and we understand the human mind much more effectively. So if we can reverse engineer and understand the principles of this kind of nonverbal communication, and then employ them through our robots, then we're onto something extremely powerful. Understanding the nature of the human mind, of the social intelligence, and then we're able to use it in characters that seem alive and aware, and maybe someday will literally be alive and aware. These can be useful for not just entertainment, but also education, autism treatment. Who knows what else? I mean, this is perhaps a revolutionary paradigm for human-computer interface.
Dr. Hansen, how are your robots being used now?
Our robots now are being used in scientific laboratories around the world. The University of Cambridge, University of Geneva, University of Pisa. They're used in Asia and dozens of laboratories around the world for cognitive science research and artificial intelligence research, sometimes material science, sometimes autism treatment and therapy research. So in all of these labs, they're being used to explore the intersection of man and machine. And this is in the sense of humans and robots interacting, trying to understand the human biology of cognition and human-to-human perception with computational models of human cognition and emotion. In effect, what we're doing is trying to understand the human being and use that understanding in our machines to facilitate better human-machine relationships. So I see in the future that our machines are going to be humanized. We're not going to mechanize the humans as much. We're going to try to make our machines more fundamentally human in their core, give them the capacity of understanding, compassion, inner relations with people that will facilitate amazing new discoveries and technologies that will affect our daily lives.
You've been listening to David Hansen, Chief Scientist of Hansen Robotics and RoboKind. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We're Earth Sky, heard on 1,200 stations around the world, including Voice of America. Deborah Bird joins us now to talk about the global night sky and something wonderful in November, an eclipse of the midnight sun. Deborah, welcome.
Hello, Jorge. The midnight sun. First of all, we don't all have a midnight sun. You have to be on one of the extremes of Earth, either the North Pole or the South Pole, or around those two poles, to see a midnight sun. So at this time of year, we're in November now. It's, edging toward winter in the Northern Hemisphere. So at the North Pole right now, there is no sun. So that sort of tells you that this eclipse of the midnight sun is going on in the opposite hemisphere. It's going on in the Southern Hemisphere. In fact, the eclipse of the midnight sun, which will be on November 25th, will be visible from Antarctica.
And what will this eclipse of the midnight sun look like? Is it a total eclipse? What is it?
Well, it's not a total eclipse. It's a partial eclipse, but it's a very deep partial eclipse. The eclipse is more than 90%. So it's really cool to be in Antarctica. And actually, I got to go there a couple of decades ago, and I got to go there right about that same time of year, around November. And it's so strange to be there at that time of year because the sun truly is up all the time. I mean, you'll wake up at 3 a.m. and open the dark night shades that they have there and look outside, and it's blazing sunlight. So as you're standing there on the Antarctic continent, and of course it's covered with ice and snow, you'll see the eclipse begin to take place if you have appropriate solar filters, and gradually the moon will cover the sun greater than 90%. So the landscape around you will darken a bit, and you'll see the moon cover the sun.
I mean, that must be an incredible sight. Antarctica, I imagine, already is a completely alien-looking landscape, and to see an eclipse of the sun must just really blow your mind.
Yeah, I imagine it really does. I mean, just it boggles my mind just to think about this eclipse. And of course, we won't get to see it, but we can imagine it. And one of the cool things about Antarctica is that the colors there are so different from what you might think. There's a lot of blue in the ice. It's very bluish looking. Nature in general there is just a completely different thing than it is when you're standing in a forest or something where there's a lot of greenery around, because there's no greenery whatsoever in Antarctica. It's all ice and rock and snow. And then above you in the sky, this blazing sun during the months of November, December, January at least. And on November 25th, this very amazing eclipse.
So listeners in Antarctica will get a treat coming November 25th, but there's also people elsewhere who might be able to see a little bit of this eclipse. Is that right?
Yeah, the eclipse will also be seen from South Africa, Tasmania, and almost all of New Zealand. So if anyone is hearing us from those places, you'll see this eclipse on November 25th. The rest of us won't see it, but we'll just have to imagine it on that date, the moon passing in front of the sun.
Incredible. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Luis Castilla joins us now to talk about news in our solar system, evidence of water on Jupiter's moon Europa. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Jorge. How's it going?
Doing well. So what's happening on Europa?
So a group of scientists here at the University of Austin have discovered what appears to be a body of liquid water in Europa, one of Jupiter's moons. The discovery, published in Nature magazine, has been labeled as potentially a big step in the search for life outside our planet. So this lake could be as big as the Great Lakes of North America, contain as much water. And according to the lead investigator, Brittany Schmidt, from the Geophysics Institute of UT, the water could represent a potential habitat for life, and it could also signal the existence of other lakes in Europa.
Yeah, so the evidence that Dr. Schmidt and her colleagues wrote about in the journal Science, it's based on computer models that explain something that's happening on these moons, right?
Yes, observing what's been happening to the ice of Earth for the last 20 years, they've been able to create some models. And what they are seeing in Europa very much resembles what happens to ice here on Earth.
Yeah, these are cracks. These are cracks that are on the surface of Jupiter's moon Europa. Scientists haven't been able to understand what is making these cracks. They're like domes. They're domes on the surface. And Dr. Schmidt can explain these by the water that is coming up from below, from these lakes, basically.
These observations, I mean, the scientists are pretty sure that what they're seeing is a lake. But they cannot be 100% sure until they send a spacecraft, which is the next step to see if this is a reality.
Right. Yeah, the lead scientist for the Mars rovers, Steve Squires, has talked to Earth Sky before about the priorities for exploring space, our space neighborhood. And one of the big priorities is this Jupiter Europa orbiter that is scheduled for 2020. And it'll go there and it'll orbit this moon, and it'll find out, you know, it may find out for sure whether there is liquid water there and whether there might be life.
Which would be incredible.
It would be. Thanks, Luis, for that report.
Thank you, Jorge. A pleasure, as always.
Earth Sky's Luis Castilla. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Sleep Good, Okote Soul Sounds, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage.